Hi, I'm Mark Little. I'm going to do something that, if I were you, I would recommend flagging this video and keeping it for future reference, because I'm going to provide somewhat of a comprehensive orientation for individuals who are wanting to make sure you're crystal clear on the sequence and the elements, the essential elements of what we call the client service methodology that we are teaching. So I'm going to go through it. I'm going to take my time. I'm going to make all the points that I think you need to know, either if you're new to the program, just so you got it all, you understand where we're heading, but also once you're in the program. One thing I've noticed is once you're implementing all these pieces and parts, it's easy to get distracted. You have things going on in your business day to day. I think of it as the minutiae having to do with, serving clients or putting out fires or staff issues or whatever it is. All I'm saying is the day-to-day momentum can overtake the big vision. And so I have been asked to create this comprehensive view of our system so that you can always go back and listen to this again and kind of get back into the big vision of what we're trying to do here. All right. So just to be clear, what we focus on are three skills that every financial advisor who's going to be successful ultimately needs to master. So, and today, this orientation, I'm just focusing on one of the three skills. So let me set the stage. So you've got the three skills are you've got client acquisition, which includes lead generation. You need to master that skill. Now, what is it? Well, it's not client service. It's before client service. Client acquisition has to do with do you have the skill to fill your calendar on a weekly basis with ample people who want to sit down and explore doing business with you? If you do, you're great. You've got client acquisition or at least lead generation mastered. If you have a hard time and your schedule is not filled with people every week who want to sit down and talk business or explore doing business with you, well, then client acquisition is a skill that you need to work on with us. Okay, so client acquisition, skill number one. Skill number two, I call it client conversion. It's very simple. It's the skill of being able to convert a potential client into an actual paying client. So it's that whole process after someone understands what services you provide, it looks like there's a good fit. In other words, what you're providing is what they are seeking. So seems like there's a match. So then the question on the table is, what is the client conversion process? What is your process to move a potential ideal client into an actual paying client? So it occurred to me 20 some odd years ago that this is a very important piece of the process and separate, and that there are advisors who are great at client acquisition who are not so great at client conversion. So that's a second skill. The third skill, which I'm going to focus on in this video, is client service. So you have client acquisition, client conversion, and client service. Now, how do we define client service in this program? This is very important. I would write this down, because if you can get this, then you'll have a solid grounding in what we are trying to achieve and how you measure success. Okay, so what is client service? I define client service as the skill, but I would add, and the process, but the skill of being able to consistently exceed your client's expectations, but as measured by an increasing rate of client referrals. Okay, so let me go through that again a little bit more slowly. The idea of client service When I started this out, well, I had been in the business for many, many years, but when I sat down in the year 2000, it was right at the beginning of the new century where a lot of factors came together that proved to me that I needed to make a major overhaul in my business. And I did. This is where we developed this notion that client service needs to be focused on the client. So we need to come up with services that the clients want, that the clients are willing to pay a lot of money for, as opposed to what I was doing. And I think what a lot of advisors do, was doing prior to that is, you know, I was providing services, number one, that I had access to. So I had services that I could, back in the day, I had services I could provide clients through my broker dealer and so forth. So, and so I flipped that upside down. It's not just services I have access to. And oh, by the way, my first, I'm going to say 15 years in the business, I was having services kind of foisted upon me by, I'll call it the financial services industry. It was a combination of the financial services industry. And that was represented for me way back like 25 years ago or 30 years ago by wholesalers for various financial services complexes who wanted to sit down with me as an independent advisor and twist my arm to promote their products and services. So we had the financial services industry and certainly my own company. I worked for a Wall Street-based firm. They were in there in the mix too. They had products and services that they were trying to push me to promote or sell. And then I was looking at the landscape saying, you know, here's what I have access to. And so in the year 2000, I threw all that out the window. I said, I'm going to take a whole different approach. And so I spent a lot of time and effort and money researching what, you know, if we throw out everything and we just start asking highly affluent people, what is the kind of relationship you want to have with a financial advisor like me? And what am I doing? So if you're thrilled at the service, if I'm exceeding your expectations, what am I doing? And so we spent over a year going, it was actually 2 years that we spent really digging into this and a picture started to emerge. But I asked a second question in the research. Not only did I want to know what clients wanted in terms of service, but I was also interested in a slightly different variation on that question, which is what are clients willing to pay the most for? I wanted to know both. I wanted to know what they thought they needed in terms of services from someone like me, but I was also mildly curious what they're willing to pay the most for. So I'm going to sit here and go through this with you very carefully, but I don't want you to miss the measure of success. It occurred to me almost a quarter of a century ago that client satisfaction is a very hard thing to measure. You cannot just look at the fact that a client has not fired you and therefore, you know, I'm still standing, I'm still surviving, all my clients are still paying my fee, so they must be satisfied. No, that's a horrible measure, a very low bar for measuring client satisfaction. So then what is it? Well, we spent quite a bit of time and effort trying to figure out what is the best and most direct measure of client satisfaction, and we discovered it. It's pretty simple. It boils down to this. The best and most direct measure of client satisfaction is client referrals. Now, but I don't want to get into the false conclusions that I run across from time to time with advisors who are thinking about this, such as, what about clients that don't refer at all because they don't know people or they're slightly uncomfortable referring? Are you saying they're not satisfied? No, I am not saying that. What I am saying is this. If you have an increasing client referral rate, in other words, not just total numbers of referrals, but the rate of referrals per client per year is on the increase, I don't think they're, well, I have the courage of my convictions because I've got data on this. The clients who do refer to you are thrilled with you. In other words, they would not risk their reputation. They would not, you know, they just wouldn't take the chance of promoting you to people that they know and love and care about unless they were confident that you're doing a job, a great job for them. And so that's all I'm saying. And so it boils down to this: the best and most direct measure of client satisfaction, no matter what you're providing for client services, is client referrals. So in our system, the measure that you keep an eye on is annual client referral rate. How many referrals am I receiving per client per year? And just looking back over the last 12 months. So I've got referrals coming in from clients over the last 12 months. I divide the number of referrals by the number of clients, and I come up with an annual client referral rate for the last 12 months. That's the critical essential measurement. So I don't want to get into the weeds here. I want to sit down. I want to sit back and I don't know about you, but I'm going to have a cup of coffee here and I'm going to go through the mechanics of delivering on the promise of this program, which is that you will consistently exceed your clients' expectations as measured by the client referral rate. So just to simplify everything I'm saying is if you have an increasing client referral rate, you can count on the fact that your client satisfaction is rising. And if you have a declining client referral rate or flat, well, the opposite is true. So we work with the team, we make these referral rates well known among our team, and this is part of our system, which is to create a monthly report on the client referral rate, and the rate is either increasing or decreasing or flat, and the only thing that's acceptable is increasing, without going into exceptions, it should be an increasing rate. Now, the starting point is, what is your current client referral rate? Like if you and I were on the phone right now, could you walk me through it? Could you tell me, my client referral rate for the past 12 months is on average 3.2 referrals per client per year. Okay. I can tell you that in the first 12 months of implementing our system, my goal for you is a minimum of 3. So, if you implement and you're serious about implementing this methodology, the measure of success is quite easy to understand. If 12 months from today, you aren't receiving at least 3 referrals per client per year on average, well, then we need to sit down and assess what you're doing, because there's something that's not fully implemented. There's something about the system that's either been skipped or not understood well, or the team is just ignoring it. So what I'm saying is that if you implement the system that we're going to go through here step by step, and you implement it at the standards that we share with you, in other words, implement each of these things at a certain standard. And just so you know, my focus with my own team is I want to get everything in place to an 80% standard. I realize that to get to an 80% standard, we have implemented the essential elements at enough of a level to receive the payoff that we're talking about. But to get that final 20%, to move from 80% to 100 on everything that I'm going to walk through right now, it will take years to get there. And if you insist on getting that final 20% now, which I'm saying in the first 90 days and the first 16 months, and I'll go through all these timeframes with you as we go through all this, but you know, don't try to move everything to 100% implementation level to our standards. Shoot for 80%. But if you'll put in place every element that we're going to talk about here today at an 80% level, there will be no question that you'll be a minimum of 3 referrals per client per year on average this time next year. So what is it now? And that's my question to you. If we were meeting face-to-face, are you tracking this? Do you know? And so we've got a spreadsheet template to track all this. We'll provide it to you. You don't need to do anything. The tracking is easy. It's just whenever you receive a referral, you go on the spreadsheet, you add the name, you assign to which client gave you the referral, and put the date of receiving the referral. So with those three pieces of information, the name of the referral, the name of the referrer, and the date of the referral, you're going to be able to revolutionize your business because you now have a tool that you can utilize with your team to establish a team goal and then publicize back to your team as far as accountability, whether they are or are not satisfying the clients. And that's the bottom line. So go get a cup of coffee, put this on pause. We're going to go through step by step all of the elements of the client service model that we teach, which, you know, what is the average referral rate for most advisors we work with? Well, it's at or below one per client per year, pretty consistently. Now, you may be different if you're getting 1.5 or 2 referrals per client per year. Well, then you're way above average. And so when we talk about getting your referral rate to 3 per client per year on average, you're in standard deviations, significantly more satisfied clients than the average in the industry, because the average high-end financial advisor who holds themselves out to clients as providing what they call comprehensive financial services to an ideal client community, the average referral rate is less than 1. So if you're receiving more than 1 referral per client per year, well, you're already above average. Everything that we teach will just take you to a whole new level, all right? But the goal is 3. And that'll put you in a category of 1. You'll be radically differentiated from every other financial advisor that you've ever been up against as a competitor. If you'll put this methodology that we teach into place, there's just no way the odds are statistically 0 that your potential clients could go out and interview several advisors in your community and find someone to deliver deliver on what we call comprehensive financial services, actually what we call truly comprehensive financial services, which is trademarked. But the idea that any other financial advisor can come anywhere close to what you're providing is statistically 0. So this is important. So go get a cup of coffee. We're going to go through these 1 by 1. And when you're ready, come back and turn on play. All right. So we've talked about what we're trying to do. We're trying to exceed the expectations of clients. And how do we know? As measured by the annual client referral rate. The one thing that I didn't mention, and it's important to think about, is the concept of unsolicited client referrals. So let's say the first step in the milestone is to achieve a minimum of 3 referrals per client per year on average across your client community, but in any form. So it could be referrals that you solicited. It could be, because a lot of advisors say, oh my gosh, I don't even ask my clients for referrals. And I hate doing that. And I don't have a script for that. And I don't have a script that I'm comfortable with. It seems manipulative. I'm with you on that. So we do have a referral conversation that we recommend. It does not ask for referrals, but I have a method of handling this. But I will tell you, for years and years, until Bill Bachrach actually sat me down and convinced me I'm an idiot for not having some sort of a solicited referral process. So I created one that where you don't ask for referrals. Okay. So Bill Bachrach cured me of not soliciting, but you can take it or leave it, because the ultimate goal in this program is to get have 3 unsolicited client referrals per client per year. And that, what is an unsolicited client referral? It's a referral that comes in where the potential client contacts you directly and you're not sure who they are. And they follow up by saying something like, you're a client of yours named so-and-so suggested that I give you a call. Or the client themselves orchestrate some sort of a meet and greet or maybe an email introduction or something. The point is, it's out of the blue, an unsolicited client referral. So we're not going to focus on unsolicited client referrals at the start. We're going to be happy to get referrals no matter how you do it. And if you want to solicit referrals and use what we call the references project to stimulate that, we do have a good process for stimulating referrals on a solicited basis without ever asking anyone for a referral. So relax. So you don't have to sit there and think, oh my gosh, this is just like every other program. They're going to force me to sit down with all my clients and make them get out their contact list. And I'm going to twist their arm manipulatively until they cough up, you know, 5 or 10 or 15 referrals. No, we're never going to do that ever. So the way it worked for me for years until Bill Bachrach straightened me out was, a referral was only an unsolicited client referral. Why? Because I never asked for referrals ever. Okay, so I fixed that eventually. All I'm saying is the ultimate goal is to get a minimum of 3 unsolicited client referrals, but starting with referrals from any method first and foremost. Once you've mastered the client service part of it, the unsolicited client referrals will begin to roll in, I would say somewhat naturally, because that was my experience, right? So you don't have to worry about scripting or referrals or anything. Just focus on knocking your client's socks off. This whole process that I'm going to walk through is designed with one thing in mind and one thing only. It is to deliver a level of service across a client community that's profitable. And in our system, you'll learn this as you go along. I don't recommend that you roll out any financial product or service unless your profit margin is 50% or greater. So, you know, we're recommending that you deliver this financial service that we call truly comprehensive financial services at a level that is extraordinarily high, but still remains profitable. Profitable to the tune of at least a 50% profit margin. So you've got the revenue the client pays you, and then the expenses that it takes you to deliver this extraordinary level of comprehensive financial services. And then you've got your net profit. So your revenue from the client minus expenses, that's your profit. And that profit is going to be at least 50% profit margin. All right. So We kept an eye on when I built this, I kept an eye on the fact that you can't deliver extraordinary service and then there's a slim profit margin. It's not worth the effort. No, you can't do that. So everything we are teaching is with the idea of exceeding clients' expectations across a profitable client community. Okay. So coffee. What is element number one? Well, let's take a moment for element number one, and I'm not going to count them. I'm just going to go step by step through the client service sequence. The first concept that you will master is just what is what we trademarked and call truly comprehensive financial services. So for my part, I have training modules on this. At the end of the day, it is really 2 things. I provide you with training on what I call the 10 client deliverables. All right. So what are those? Well, they are 10 deliverables that you promise to your client that you're going to deliver on an annual basis, these 10 things across 5 major areas of finance. So we are going to be offering truly comprehensive financial services, delivering 10 things, 10 client deliverables every year, annually, across five areas of finance. So we'll go through them a couple of times through this whole orientation. But just to put it out up front, what are the five primary areas of personal finance that we're talking about? And by the way, it's worth noting that this service is focused on a potential client's personal financial objectives, their personal financial affairs. If you're sitting there thinking, yeah, but I offer business consulting. I am an advisor that focuses more on businesses. Well, that's fine. I do too. But in our method, that needs to be separated out, that you don't combine the two. You come in with a solution to their personal financial affairs first, under the theory that the only reason they're in business is to provide some sort of solution or, you know, some way to monetize the business to fund their ideal life. So we focus first on what is their ideal life? What are their objectives personally? So truly comprehensive financial services is about delivering these 10 things on an annual basis to coordinate their personal financial affairs. And the five areas that we focus on are financial planning, which is the client, their goals. So goal planning, financial planning, money management, that's investment advice and investment management, estate planning, tax planning, and what I call risk and safety planning, which is having the area includes, but is bigger than insurance. So you have to have expertise in all five areas. Financial planning, like a certified financial planner, you need to have money management. We recommend that you go out and find a chartered financial analyst, CFA, for that area. So estate planning, lawyer, tax planning, CPA, and then risk and safety is an expert in the area of insurance as a one component of risk management and increasing the safety of the overall plan. But those are the five areas. Now, I said there were two things. So we have the 10 client deliverables. What's the second thing in truly comprehensive financial services? Well, it's the concept that we recommend that it's that these 10 deliverables be delivered by a team of five subject matter experts, just as I described a minute ago. So that rather than you being a one-man band, providing expertise in all five areas, which the more successful and the more affluent the client is, the less they believe one person like you can be truly an expert in all five of these areas. So in our methodology, we recommend that you build and lead a team of experts, five experts in these five areas, who then they deliver the 10 client deliverables. So those 10 client deliverables are split up among the five, what we call subject matter experts. And so that's truly comprehensive financial services. And just to sum that up, it's when for a given client, so let's say you have an ideal client who's hired you to provide truly comprehensive financial services, how do you know whether or not you've delivered on that promise? Because you track it and you have a checklist on an annual basis that you've checked off each of the 10 client deliverables in these five areas of personal finance so that nothing falls through the cracks. The 10 client deliverables tie to the five areas of personal finance. And so how do you do that? How do you deliver on 10 client deliverables? Well, we teach you how to create checklists under each of the 10 client deliverables that your team of subject matter experts make sure gets done in each of the deliverables. If you're asking me, in my offices, it's 142 deliverables checkpoints per client per year. I should say per ideal client per year. So whether your list is 142 or not, we'll get into that in the training. Do you have to use my 142 deliverables checkpoints? No, you don't. But the point is, you've got a checklist. When it's been checked off for the year, in my case, 142 points, then that means the 10 client deliverables have gotten completed for that year. And we clear the slate and we cycle through and we just start going through it again for the next 12 months. So it's every year completing the checklist. That's truly comprehensive financial services. How does that compare with the rest of the industry? Well, who knows? The thing that struck me almost 25 years ago is when you really dig into it, there is no industry accepted standard for this term that we use called comprehensive financial services. It's more or less a marketing term in our industry, means different things to different people, and it certainly means different things to advisors than it means to their clients. So I fixed that. I defined truly comprehensive financial services in a way that the client can understand what we're doing. Okay, so let's move on to the next element. So in our system, once you commit and understand to implementing truly comprehensive financial services, what's the first thing to do? What's the next step? Well, if you're going to be coordinating a team, if you're going to do this the way we recommend, and by the way, we show you how to build this team fast and you don't have to have any budget. So if you're sitting there worried thinking, oh my gosh, I don't have a budget to build a team like Mark's talking about, don't worry. I used to say you can build it on a shoestring budget, but the reality is it's no budget for the team, but there does need to be a budget for this next step, in my opinion. That if your goal is to consistently exceed the expectations of a community of ideal clients, don't even think about doing this without administrative support. So the first step is to hire an effective, what we call administrative manager. All right. So you may be sitting there thinking, well, that's great. I already have an assistant. Check that one off the list. Hold on. You may have someone who is up to the task, but often it's not true. So the next step is truly understanding the role of an effective administrative manager. And we have an entire module on the role of an effective administrative manager. And then once that's clear in your mind, then you go out and find someone to fill that role. And if you've got someone already on the team, it's just changing the language that you use with them, very complimentary, but it's to them. But you go to your existing assistant and say, look, I'm creating a new position called the administrative manager, and I think you'd be great for it, but I want you to decide. I want you to go through this module explaining the role of an effective administrative manager, and you'll see that it's a little different from what you're currently doing, and it's really more a management position. It's administrative manager, which means you'll be managing a team of subject matter experts for me. Now, we've got full training and support on how to do that. But what you need to know at the beginning is this new role, administrative manager, something that they want to go for? And if so, tell them, great, I will throw your name in at the top of the list. You'll be a candidate. We will be interviewing other candidates, but if you decide this is something you'd like to do, you have a leg up. You're already working with me. I mean, if you're serious about this and you're willing to, you know, meet the standards of an effective administrative manager as it's laid out, then great. But I think you might be surprised. They're happy what they're doing, but you start talking about serving at a higher level and more of a project leadership position, which is what the administrative manager is in our system, they may or may not want to interview for that. So hiring an effective administrative manager, we recommend that's the next and first step. You start there, because once you have effective administrative support in place, well, then in addition to helping build and lead the team, they will help you do the tracking that's necessary to make sure that you're implementing all the essential elements that I'm going through here with you right now. Okay, so what's the next thing? By the way, if you want to watch this video in several parts, every time I take a sip, that's going to be a new element. So if you want to pause at some point, you can kind of look at the video and fast forward through it. Every time you see me take a sip of my wonderful cup of coffee, that's where we move on to the next thing. So what's next? Well, the first thing that we're going to put in place, or at least understand, is what I consider to be the foundation of truly comprehensive financial services. And that is the creation of what you call a financial plan, but what I call a comprehensive written lifetime financial strategy. So why do I call it something different than everybody else calls it? Why don't I just call it a financial plan? Because again, there is no standardized definition of the outcome that we call a well-written financial plan. Financial planning, as it's certified by CFPs, is a process. And what the actual work product is at the end of that process is different depending on what firm you're with and what your personal standards are. All I'll say is, in truly comprehensive financial services, we worked with clients to establish a high standard for this thing that the industry calls a financial plan. And so we immediately started referring to it as, we never call it a financial plan, or we try never to. We call it a comprehensive written lifetime financial strategy. So it's got a different name, but that's a mouthful. So the shorthand is overarching strategy, or I'm okay with overarching plan. So if you just stop using the term financial plan and just start saying, you know, the first step, Mr. and Mrs. Ideal Client, is we're going to establish a comprehensive written lifetime financial strategy for you, otherwise known as a documented overarching strategy, something that does not exist in your situation currently. And if you want to call it an overarching plan, that's fine too. So what is it? Well, there's five elements to it, and that's part of our training. We show you, here's each of the elements of a well-written overarching plan produced by five subject matter experts. And there's a voluminous amount of information created by each of the five SMEs. In other words, if you were to be stubborn and say, oh, I want to be a one-man band like I've been for all these years, well, then roll up your sleeves. Because if you want to produce the type of overarching plan that clients want from an advisor at the high end, well, you're going to be up hours and hours and hours creating five different plans. You're going to create a comprehensive written lifetime tax planning document. And then you're going to go back and create a comprehensive written lifetime money management document. And then you're going to create a comprehensive written lifetime financial planning document focused on the client's goals. So you're going to have a separate document for the comprehensive written lifetime money management plan, risk and safety or insurance plan. All five areas is going to have a fully documented plan. And that's the keystone of this overarching plan that we will teach your team step-by-step how to create. Now, what is it worth? So that's a lot of time and effort to create this overarching plan that clients have said, I would pay a lot for that. That's what I'm looking for, that right there. So we've got it dialed in for you. The question is, what do you charge for it? Well, if it's an ideal client, we recommend that you make this part of your ideal client service. But if let's say you come up with a non-ideal client, but they're sitting on a lot of money, but they just don't fit your ideal client profile otherwise, you know, could you create this plan for a non-ideal client as a one-off? Yes, you should charge $20,000 for the plan. So some of you are saying, okay, no problem. You know, you're charging a lot currently. Well, that for you, this is no big deal. But I can tell you, for the vast majority of advisors joining our program, it's like hair on fire. It's like $20,000 for a financial plan. I don't charge anywhere near that right now. You know, and it's very interesting what advisors charge currently. It's, you know, 3,000, 5,000, maybe 10,000, occasionally 12,000, never 20,000. So the way we recommend is we will teach you how to create a plan that's worth $20,000 to the client, because we have data telling us this. And we ask that you only produce this level of plan if you will charge more than $10,000, not $10,000 and not less than $10,000. But if you will agree to charge more than $10,000 for this comprehensive written lifetime financial strategy format, then we're good. Otherwise, you're just leaving money on the table and you're diluting. You're doing more effort than you're being paid to do. It's not as profitable as it needs to be for you. And, you know, there's probably something slipping through the cracks in the whole process. So we will dial in for you exactly what we mean and the format of how to create a comprehensive written lifetime financial strategy. Okay, so that's the next step. What's after that? Well, what if you stumbled across an ideal client tomorrow? Or what if you stumbled across a non-ideal client tomorrow that maybe they don't fit your profile. Maybe you don't like them or whatever. So they're never going to be an ideal client, but they have lots of money and you'd like to, you know, spend a little bit of time creating a strategy like this. Well, if you have now that you have a plan that you can charge $20,000 for, that the client will agree it's worth that, then, what if you came across a client tomorrow? So the next step in our process, the next step in a sequence, is to begin building your team of five subject matter experts. Now, we break that out into two phases. The phase that I'm talking about first, right now, it's how to build a quick interim team. So the next step in the sequence is, how do I build a team of five subject matter experts in those five areas, but fast? How do I build that team fast and on just an interim basis? And we have a process for that. We have a process. It really requires that you have an administrative manager, because we train your administrative manager on how to run this process to build a quick interim team. But the process is designed to build a team of five interim subject matter experts in less than 30 days. We've nailed it. We've got it down to 2 weeks. So if I were to parachute into your town and open up an office, I could build a team of five quick interim subject matter experts capable of creating a $20,000 financial overarching strategy or overarching plan. I could build that team in 2 weeks or less. All right. But because your administrative manager may have never done this before, unlikely they have helped build a team that I'm describing, but it's unlikely they have done this before and they need our support and our help to get this done. So we give them 30 days. So all I'm saying is, your goal should be, after you understand what a comprehensive written lifetime financial strategy is, it's to give the authorization. And this is the first real acid test as to whether your administrative manager has what it takes or not. But the question on the table is, can they implement our step-by-step strategy to fill all five SME roles with a subject matter expert? I started to say outside, but if you've got like a certified financial planner on your staff or something, it doesn't have to be outside independent contractors, but usually it is. But can your administrative manager follow a process that's already documented for getting that team in place with five individuals who each have above average technical skills in their area? Can your administrative manager pull that off and get an interim team put in place in less than 30 days? That's the next step. And so that you get that done. Now you've got a team in place. You can accept clients, even ideal clients, because the first step in the process with any client is to create an overarching plan. And now you've got the formula for that and the team to do it. And you have 100% delegated the creation of this overarching strategy that's worth $20,000 to an interim team. Okay, so the interim team's in place. What next? All right. Well, having an interim team in place just simply buys you time. Now you've got a team in place and you're open for business. What's the next step? Well, it's to keep your administrative manager moving forward, helping you build and lead your team. So you have five individuals who have agreed to serve as your subject matter expert in one of five areas on an interim basis. So the next step is to, in sequence, slow down and one by one, pick one SME area and replace the interim person with a permanent person. Okay, whoa. Can't the interim person be the permanent person? Yes. But again, just like I said with your administrative manager, you give them the option. So, and you explain, look, as an interim subject matter expert, I really only have two expectations for you. Here's what I need. And we spell that out in our training. So it's real simple. But yes, if you have interest and you would like, let's say you're currently you're a CPA, a certified public accountant. You've currently agreed to serve as my interim tax subject matter expert. That's great. If you have interest in continuing and then ultimately filling that same role, but on a permanent basis, rather than interim basis, I'm open to that. All you need to do is raise your hand and say, yeah, I'd like to put my name in the hat for that. We're going to interview other individuals, but if you'd like to continue, well, you're already in the role. You have a leg up on everyone. But there are a few additional expectations if you move from interim to permanent. So, and all I will say is some do, some don't want to move. You know, once they see the high standards and they're delivering on the two expectations that we've asked them to deliver on as an interim subject matter expert, if they just don't think they're up to the task, if they're unable or they're unwilling to move into the permanent role, that's fine. But so then in that case, we go one by one through your subject matter experts, and we fill each role on a permanent basis. So we pause one by one and fill that SME role, from move it from an interim to now you've got a permanent subject matter expert in that in place, someone that's agreed to everything, all the standards that you've asked for, not just two things, but a short list of things. And now you have a permanent person in that role. And then, so we've got a 12-step process, which we call the 12-step deliverables team recruitment process. Let me tell you, if your administrative manager was able to implement our process to build the team quickly, they'll have no problem following this deliverables team recruitment process to replace interim SMEs with permanent SMEs. So how long does the process take? Well, it's a 60-day process. So we have designed, and we've done it ourselves so many times, filled these positions, these subject matter expert positions, to follow that 12-step process. It's designed to take 60 days. Can it be shorter? Yes. On average, my administrative manager can fill an interim role with a permanent subject matter expert in 30 to 45 days. So it could be shorter, but it all goes back to the skill of your administrative manager and other factors like how easily overwhelmed does your administrative manager get? If they're easily overwhelmed, well, then you'll need to point them to my team and help them get there. We have tools to reduce the overwhelm. There's something wrong if they get easily overwhelmed. It means they almost always they don't understand how to prioritize their work, because once things are well prioritized, everything slows down. You're not overwhelmed. But so if they're easily overwhelmed, then it'll take 60 days. Count on 60 days. Put it another way, if they cannot implement the deliverables team recruitment process to replace an interim SME with a permanent, if they cannot follow that process and complete it within less than 60 days, they're not a good fit to be your administrative manager. And we're going to have to go back and address that issue. Okay. But most can, and most, when they get the hang of it, are able to replace an interim SME with a permanent SME in 30 to 45 days. So you do the math. We go one by one for 60 days, replacing interim with permanent SMEs. So you do the math. That tends to take the average firm. And that's if you don't have any subject matter experts currently in place at the beginning. If you're starting from scratch, on average, it takes about 16 months for the average advisor like you with a strong administrative manager to fully build out a permanent team of subject matter experts that, like in my case, you know, they'll be with you for years and years and years and years. I had a little turnover at the beginning while I was creating all this, but once we got it dialed in to what you're doing, the team has very low turnover, and unless they retire or have a health issue, you know, you can count on your permanent team to be there for a while. So that's what we call the 12-step deliverables team recruitment process. Got it? We've moved from an interim team to now we have a permanent team. What's next? Okay. I don't know if it's next. It's actually concurrent with the first team member that you add, but I had to slip it in somewhere. So I would say, now that you have a team in place, the next or the first thing that needs to be firmly established, and I'm going to say the first day someone shows up to serve on your team, all right, is this next step. So it's something that precedes building the team, but I'm telling you, once the team's in place, now you're holding the team accountable to this, all right? So everybody on the team is accountable to the next thing, which we call the team goal. Okay, so most financial advisors do not have a team. Most financial advisors are like a one-man band. They're just providing whatever services they provide through them. And I'm not saying they're bad or anything. As a matter of fact, I was that advisor for over a dozen years, and my clients were more or less happy with me. And I did not offer as full of services as we're talking right here, but you know, I was, let's call it more than just your average financial advisor, but it was just delivering one or two or three services. Well, now you've got a full-blown team. You've got five subject matter experts coordinating 10 client deliverables off for a community of what we're going to call ideal clients. I'm saying most advisors do not have a team like we're describing, but even those advisors who do have a team in place, they do not have a team goal. You know, maybe some do, but I'm saying I've got data on this, that of the small number of financial advisors that do try to build a team to deliver services, statistically zero have a team goal. So the premier element of our team is that not only do we have a team goal, but we require everyone on the team before they come in to acknowledge the goal, accept the goal. And then once they're on the team, we hold every team member accountable for delivering on and contributing to the team goal. Okay. So that's different. So having a team is different, and having a team goal that you require to be acknowledged and accepted and contributed to by every team member, that's unheard of. Okay. So now you've created standards. So what is the team goal? It's not going to surprise you. When a new team member comes in, you share with them, you recite that the team goal is to consistently exceed our ideal client's expectations. So it's the team goal to consistently exceed our ideal client's expectations. And you state the team goal before they come on board until the point when they can recite it back to you. So you're looking for a new team member to be able to recite back to you. Okay, I get it. Our team goal is to consistently exceed our ideal client's expectations. Got it. Okay, so when they can recite it, that means they've acknowledged it. You're going to go a step further. You're going to require everyone to accept it. And in my world, that requires them signing the team goal. You know, they're literally signing their name to the team goal and accepting it and committing to deliver on the team goal, at least their fair share. In other words, they agree to contribute to the team goal by pulling their weight. So you're not going to have anybody on the team who is not committed to contributing to the exceeding of clients' expectations. Now, why is this important? Well, it took me several years to figure this out, but when it comes to subject matter experts, they don't, even the top in their field, like estate planning lawyers or tax accountants or whatever they are, we have five. I just sort of assumed that it was the objective of a high-end subject matter expert to want to consistently exceed their ideal clients, like maybe not their bread and butter, like, you know, if somebody's just paying them by the hour to do some task, not maybe not them, but if they have someone that they consider to meet their, to be an ideal client, well, however they define it, I just sort of assumed, aren't we all trying to exceed those clients' expectations? No. The most shocking thing to me was even people with huge reputations that are subject matter experts in some field, they kind of take the opposite approach. I'll ask them point blank, is it your goal? And this becomes part of the due diligence process before you bring anyone onto the team. Is it your goal to exceed the expectations of your best clients, whatever you define as your ideal clients? And you'll be shocked to hear a fair percentage of, especially the top ones, kind of arrogantly say, you know, no, they're lucky to have me. They don't say it that way, but they say it more like this. No, we charge $500, $600, $800 an hour, and we're worth it. You know, we deliver on that level of expertise because I'm the most awesomest thing that walks the earth in my field. Okay, whatever. But the point is, I was shocked to learn that not every high-end subject matter expert even makes it their goal to exceed client expectations. So that's a definite limiting factor. If when you're interviewing people to serve on your team and you ask them that question, you know, if they have no interest in exceeding clients, ideal clients' expectations, if they think for whatever reason they're God's gift to the client or whatever, we just politely disengage. We don't even take the conversation further. All right. So at that point, you now know that they do attempt to exceed their clients' expectations. And furthermore, in the due diligence, we'll show you how to, this is part of the 12-step deliverables team recruitment process, but we'll show you how to screen to see, well, then what's your process for exceeding client expectations? So they'll walk you through their process and you get to vet whether you're convinced they do or don't understand how to impress ideal clients. And if they do, then you'll invite them on the team and you'll introduce the team goal. They'll happily accept it. They'll acknowledge it. They'll accept it. And they will agree to pull their weight. And so all that to say this, that next step, or maybe the first step when you're building and leading a team, is to introduce a very strict team goal that everyone has to sign off on, and everybody's got to pull their weight. And we give you measures of the what is expected of each SME. In other words, we show you how to measure that success so that if an SME turns out they are not pulling their weight or they're kind of a weak link in your chain, then we have to unfortunately replace them. But the team goal, that's the next step. So what comes after that? All right, how we doing? How you doing here? You is all this coming together? Is this helpful? Are you taking notes? I mean, in my view of this, you're taking notes right now as though this was a college class and you're going to have a test at the end. So the question is, after you go through this video, could you recite back to another member of your team more or less what I just walked you through? That's the goal. Like you cannot implement what you cannot clearly articulate to another team member. So what I am doing right now, your goal is to be able to articulate the way I am and maybe faster. Maybe you have a 5-minute version, a 10-minute version, and an hour version when a new team member comes on board so that they can understand all the pieces and parts of what we're doing to deliver client service. Okay. So what's next? You've got the team goal. Everybody's pulling it their weight. What comes next? Well, now we're kind of rolling up our sleeves. It's the actual mechanics of the process. So in the mechanics of the process, we have four ideal clients only. We have a meeting sequence for you to implement with ideal clients. We call it the 3-meeting process. Now, all these things that I've been talking to you about, each of the major areas, they're all trademarked terms. We've mapped them out and developed processes for implementing and holding accountable each step of this whole thing. And they are trademarked. So I own them. It's not something some other financial advisor could slip in around you and say, oh, I do that. No, if they're not working with us, they are not licensed to use these trademark terms. And more to the point, even if you never use the trademarked terms with your clients, let's say you only use these trademark terms like the 3-meeting process, this one we're going to go through now, but maybe you only use those trademark terms with your internal team. Well, that's fine. And a lot of advisors do it that way. You don't have to call these things what I call them to the client. All I'm saying is you are licensed to do so as long as you're, you know, in a program paying us. And so then that licenses you to utilize all this. But more important than the name, you're actually delivering on each of these things that I'm going through. And when it comes to the 3-meeting process, well, it's trademarked, but the whole process is trademarked to what we are implementing. And by being in our program, you are licensed to use this process. You are licensed to call this process the 3-meeting process or any other process of ours. You're free to use it with your clients. All right. So what is the 3-meeting process? Well, we have training on going through it. All I'm going to say at this point is it's two stages of a seamless process. And the two stages are these. The first stage is to create the comprehensive written lifetime financial strategy. So it's at the beginning. The 3-meeting process involves a series of 3 meetings, all designed to complete the comprehensive written lifetime financial strategy. So I won't go through it. We have training on that, but it's 104 days. So we have a process involving 3 meetings after you've been hired by an ideal client that's easy on the team and will knock your client's socks off. There's a lot of data that go into this meeting process, such as you can never let more than 45 days go by without actually meeting with a new client until they're overarching strategy is completed. And so we've taken a lot of data and we've just translated it into this simple thing that we call the three meeting process. And it's how many days in between meetings and what's the agenda of each meeting. But the whole first phase is designed to complete the overarching plan. Got it? All right. So we give your team 104 days to pull their weight and create their portion of this overarching strategy. That's over a quarter of a year. That's more than 90 days, I'm sure you've noticed. So I will just say it's quite a process. In other words, you've got to really step up and deliver for these clients. We did not talk about structuring your fee. That's a whole different model. But I will tell you that I've never changed my fee. I did at the beginning, like years ago, like at the turn of the century in the year 2000, I started off with a $10,000 annual fee and I realized, oh, I screwed up. That's way too low. Anyway, I went through the same problems every advisor does. And I ratcheted it up until we finally landed very quickly on $45,000 per client per year for everything that I'm describing to you. Now, I don't want to get into that right now. For some reason, most of the advisors we work with think about this. And I just tell them straight up, if you're going to deliver this method that I'm walking through step by step, don't even think about delivering it for less than $10,000 per year. The average advisor in our program is charging more than $20,000 per year. I will tell you the most popular fee, don't ask me how, I think it's a social contagion, but the most common fee for what everything I'm describing is $36,000 per client per year. Reason I bring it up here is because now you know it's a three meeting process. So after the plan is created, then you as the most trusted advisor relationship for the client, you're the lead, you're going to release that strategy after it's completed by your team into what we call the routine three meeting process. That means you're meeting with a client every 4 months. It's a smooth cadence and you're meeting three times per year. And every client, and we have agendas for each of these meetings and you just keep rotating through these three agendas. All right. So why do I mention it with the fee? I think it's because if you take a $36,000 fee, and if you were to charge the client instead of quarterly, if you were to charge the client per meeting, which a lot of advisors do, and I sort of recommend this philosophy, but if you were to have a meeting, knock the client's socks off, followed up with an invoice for a third of the annual fee, it works out to $12,000. So, you know, I think a lot of advisors just sort of like that cadence. You know, we work like crazy for 4 months to deliver an extraordinary client experience at the client progress meeting. We conduct the meeting. We knock the client's socks off. The next week, they get an invoice for $12,000. They're still basking in the warm glow of all the impressive things from the meeting in the previous week. I can see why advisors might do this. I understand the $12,000 piece. I don't necessarily understand where $36,000 came from versus, let's say, $45,000 mine, where it's $15,000 instead of $12,000. But we won't go into that. That's a whole different model. But I'm just saying you need to implement for ideal clients the three meeting process the way we lay it out. And if you will, you're not going to be expecting too much from any single team member. Yet we have created a process and we've got data on this to where you're meeting with an ideal client the least amount of times per year that you can and still exceed their expectations. So we played with this for quite some time, you know, 4 meetings a year, 5 meetings a year, 2 meetings a year, one major annual review. No. We ended up with this, the three meeting process. So that's the next step. You master this, what I call client meeting sequence for your ideal clients, with each meeting having a unique agenda that's dispersed out to your five subject matter experts. So you're accomplishing quite a bit at every meeting in the three meeting process. All right. So what's the next step in this client service process? Okay. So the next step in the process is for you to master your role in each of these meetings in the three meeting process. Now, I will say our methodology really simplifies your role. You're the orchestrator of all this. You're not one of the subject matter experts. So you have assigned to each of the five SMEs all client service. So they're doing the work. So what's your role? Well, that's what's next. It's once the three meeting process is in place, it's up to you to master what are you saying, what are you doing in the meetings. And the most important conversation that you will master, given the fact that your SMEs are doing all the work that's actually presented to the client in the meeting, so you're off the hook for client prep, client meeting prep. So what are you doing? Well, you need to master that. We have outlines for each meeting in the three meeting process so that you can master the outline of what needs to be discussed. And we have practice methods for you to practice. We call them win sprints, but we have a method where you practice the meetings so that you can master your role in these meetings. And the most important conversation that's at this stage with when you're mastering these outlines for each meeting, it's called the expectations conversation. And I'm not going to go into it in depth here. All you need to know at this point is that the expectations conversation is a conversation that you're going to conduct in every client progress meeting. It's a conversation that almost no financial advisors ever conduct with their clients, yet it's the single most important conversation for generating referrals. It's called the expectations conversation because at each and every meeting, the conversation will go a little bit different because you don't want to sound like a robot. But in essence, it goes something like this. Our team goal is to consistently exceed your expectations, Mr. and Mrs. Client. Don't forget, there's usually two clients, him and her, okay? Usually. So let's say it's two clients, Ted and Lynn Smith. You say, well, as you know, Ted, Lynn, our team goal is to consistently exceed your expectations. So, I always devote, 5 or 10 minutes every time we meet to sit down and just see how we're doing. So how are we doing? So Ted, let's start with you, or Lynn, let's start with you. What do you expect and how are we doing? So it's called the expectations conversation. At the beginning of the relationship, you're going to make it your goal in the expectations conversation to document for your team of SMEs what this client couple or this individual expects. In other words, we have developed a process through the three meeting process and through building our team, which for almost every affluent client will exceed their expectations. But let's just say for a moment, they're fussy clients and we don't know what will exceed their expectations. Maybe they're really hard to please people. This is the final piece in that puzzle. We have a process that we have data that should exceed the expectations of really any ideal client, but we're going to close the loop. In every meeting, you're going to ask the client what they expect, and you're going to compare what they expect against what you're currently doing. In other words, it's a report card at every meeting, and we can train you how to change it up so the conversation is slightly different in each meeting so you don't sound robotic, but that's the basic gist. The next thing is to master your role in these meetings, the most important conversation being, how we doing? Our goal is to exceed your expectations. First of all, what does that look like for you, Lynn, What does that look like for you, Ted? We've got a list. That list is actually in front of every SME on the team. So we're not keeping it a secret. We have a 3-meeting process designed to knock their socks off. And for each client, we have a documented list that we make sure is continually updated of what they expect. And over the last 12 months, what more could we have done to exceed their expectations? Now, we have a whole training on this, so I don't want to make it sound like this is necessarily easy. And yes, some clients are unreasonable, but at least you know. There may be some things that they say that you just have to say hard no. You know, it's just not something we're able or willing to do. What I tend to do more is when they tell me something that I think is, you know, kind of above and beyond the fee, like it's extra, but they want it. They've stated that they want it. They expect it. Okay, fine. I try to sit down. I say, well, you know what? This is news to me, Ted, Lynn. Let me go back with my team and let me talk about putting that together for you. So then I will, rather than just hard no, I'll go back with my team and discuss it. If we are able to step up and do some weird, fussy thing for them, it'll always be for an additional fee. In other words, I'll explain to them, okay, now we know you expect this above and beyond what we're currently doing. I've talked to my team. We're happy to deliver on that. It will be X number of dollars in addition to the fee that you're already paying. And then the client can say yes or no. Now it's an option. Or if it's just an unreasonable client being a jerk, well, you can, we'll teach you how to gently say hard no. And then they have to decide, you know, they're receiving all this other service from you. Do they really want to go to the next step of like closing all this down and risking that some other advisor can deliver at the same level you're currently delivering for them, which is statistically zero? You know, I mean, you're the only game in town. The odds that they're going to fire you and go somewhere else is statistically zero. So why are we going through all this then? We have the expectations conversation and we document what they expect and we truly try to deliver on that if it's reasonable. Why? Because we have data and we've seen with our own eyes. If we make the effort and have the conversation, the referral rate increases. It's not even that you're actually delivering. Now, you can't blow them off. You can't say, oh, we'll do that. And then you don't. No. It's that you care enough to ask. You're trying to exceed their expectations. And just the mere effort that you're serious about attempting to try to exceed their expectations. We've got lots of internal data on this. That in and of itself will begin increasing your client referral rate. Why? Because you ask for referrals from them? No, because when you're not around and they're face-to-face with some friend of theirs that they care about and the subject of money comes up, the idea that they will mention you to that friend of theirs as a referral is substantially higher if you conduct the expectations conversation at every single meeting for 5 or 10 minutes at the end. Okay, so that's the expectations conversation. What's next? Well, good news, it's the last step and then we're done here. So what is the crown jewel on top of all of these sequences that we've gone through? What's the final piece of the puzzle? What's the last thing that we not implement, because you're going to implement this last piece along the way, but what's the final piece that you're going to be working on and mastering, and it will take you a while to master? It's the tool that we describe as the referability dashboard. So it's a dashboard and a measurement of the key metric that we started with. It's measuring client referrals. Now we have developed a very sophisticated Excel spreadsheet. It's a template. We have full instruction. We have an entire module on implementing this spreadsheet. But at the end of it all, it boils down to this. It's your administrative manager documenting onto this, the referability dashboard, whenever a client referral comes into the firm. On the spreadsheet, you'll note the name of the referral, who referred them, which client, and on what date. So now there's a report that's generated, and we recommend that you instruct and require your administrative manager to print out the summary dashboard, the one pager, on a monthly basis and distribute it to your team, and to look for excuses to discuss this report at some point each and every month. So the question is, do you discuss this one-on-one with everyone on the team? Yes. Or do we find some meeting where we're all present in a meeting and I can just bring this up quickly? Yes. So without going into the entire three meeting process, we find excuses for both. If I have to, I'll pick up the phone and discuss this, the referability dashboard, each and every month with every team member, just to make sure they got it. It could be an email back and forth saying, hey, I noticed our referability rate went up last month. And so we now went from a flat client referral rate. Now it's increasing. And I just wanted to hat tip to you, because you're really pulling your weight, you know, in helping to exceed client expectations, and thank you. So should you email? Yes. Would a phone call be better? Absolutely. If you are having a little dress rehearsal for a major client progress meeting, we call this the dry run prep meeting. It's a 20-minute sort of dress rehearsal a week before a major client progress meeting. Well, there they are, all assembled and gathered there for you in one spot, all your SMEs and your administrative manager, all present at one meeting. We call it the dry run prep meeting. Should you pick one of those every month to just, as an excuse, just pull up the referability dashboard and either just comment about that month's progress, and if it's flat or declining, to at least mention it. You don't have to beat anybody up about it, but just to note for the group that referrals are not moving in the direction that we all agreed to. That, but if the rate is increasing, if you're printing this and the rate on the dashboard for the month shows an increasing rate of referrals for the last 12 months, well, high fives. You get to celebrate this fact. And, you know, it just starts out where maybe once every 3 or 4 months, the rate moves to an increasing rate and you can celebrate with your team. And then it's nothing, nothing, nothing for a few months. And then all of a sudden it becomes the frequency in between months is shortened. So now it's every 3 months to an increasing rate because you start to get a few more referrals. And then the goal is every month, or it's very rare to not see an increasing rate of referrals. And you're thinking, isn't that mathematically impossible to insist on an increasing rate of referrals? Well, that may be so, but let me tell you my experience in my offices. It's when you get to a client referral rate on average of 8, 9, 10 per client per year. Okay, maybe it starts flattening out, but can we all agree that if you're getting 8 or 9 or 10 unsolicited client referrals per client per year, you're going to be so busy following up on referrals, you'll be doing high fives constantly with your team. No, it's the journey to getting there, to where every month you've now, through the referability dashboard, created a moment in time where we just mention whether we're on track or off track. Okay. And you just find an excuse, either one-on-one or with the group when they're gathered for some other reason, to make the referability dashboard a monthly routine where, if nothing else, you're just not letting the moment go without comment. Okay. But when the rate is increasing and it's definitely celebration is warranted, you don't miss that either. So you comment when things are worthy of compliment to the team and celebration, but you don't miss it. In other words, you notice and comment on it even when it's flat or declining. So it's the hallmark of accountability. So that's all that I wanted to cover. I know that we've been going for a long time here. Hopefully this created a format where you could spend, you know, break this up and see it over a few sessions. Take my final sip here. But I just want to wish you all the best in implementing. We have modules and training for every single element that I walked through here. And we are providing these in a sequence if you want to go out of sequence, because by me going through it this way, you realize, wow, I need to jump ahead and master this other thing. Like I need to go out of order. That's fine. The reason that I'm going through it, more than training you how to articulate this to your team, I wanted you to see the whole thing laid out in one session so that you could decide where you are right now. And if one of the trainings that we provide sort of down the line, one of the things that we went through today, you need it now, you just send up a flare. You contact us and say, I need the 3-meeting process like right now. And we will drop everything and make sure you get what you need. So that's it for me. Wish you every future success. And all I can say is I encourage you to reach out. There's no reason as you're implementing this for you to ever be stuck or ever have a question. Whenever the whole point of working with us is that when you have a question, you have a way to get your question answered and to not be stuck. You should always be experiencing forward progress. And that's what this is all about. We wish you all the best.